You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
The world is constantly changing and transforming. Cut through some of the noise with What's New with Wired, a podcast that goes in depth on the latest news and technology and culture. Their award-winning journalism will help you make sense of what's happening in the world. Listen to What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts. That's What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts. We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. I'm happy to welcome to the show today an actor who has been one of the best parts of so many of my favorite shows, from Halt and Catch Fire to season 3 of True Detective. You also know Scoot McNairy as the voice of the Netflix series Narcos Mexico, and now he's stepping in front of the camera as the star of season 2, where he plays DEA agent Walt Breslin, who heads up Operation Leyenda, an off-the-books mission to avenge the death of slain agent Kiki Camarena and take down Mexican drug lord Felix Gallardo. And today, Scoot joins me on the show to talk about growing up in Texas, coping with dyslexia as a kid, and his early ambition to be a wildlife cinematographer. He discusses how he prepares for a role and how most of his characters are drawn from a personal friend or acquaintance, including his role in Narcos Mexico. He recalls spending time with real DEA agents in preparation for season 2, goes into the history of the Mexican narcotics cartels, and speaks frankly about the futility of the endless war on drugs. Plus, Scoot gives a preview of his role as former Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein in the miniseries of James Comey's tell-all book, A Higher Loyalty. Coming up with Scoot McNairy in just a moment. Folks, you know Scoot McNairy from his roles in films like Argo, 12 Years a Slave, Gone Girl, Batman vs. Superman, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, just to name a few. He's also starred in some of the best series on television like Halt and Catch Fire, Godless, Season 3 of True Detective, and Narcos Mexico. Scoot was the voice of the narrator on Season 1 of Narcos Mexico, and now he's getting a lot more screen time in Season 2 as he plays DEA agent Walt Breslin, man on a mission to avenge the death of his fellow agent, Kiki Camarena, and capture number one drug kingpin, Felix Gallardo. Season 2 is streaming on Netflix starting February 13th. Scoot McNairy, welcome, man.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on the show.
Well, this is fun. You know, it's not every day that I get a fellow Texan on the show. In fact, it's pretty rare. So,
tell me, where are you from?
I'm from Houston. You're from up north, right?
Born and raised outside of Dallas. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, where outside of Dallas?
Lake Highlands High School would be the community that I was grew up in. Went to high school. Yeah.
Okay. Do you get back there much?
As much as I can. I live outside of Austin now.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, I mean in Texas quite a bit, but not necessarily to my hometown. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Do you have a ranch out there?
Outside of about an hour outside of Austin.
That's nice. Yeah. See, you know, once I left for LA, I never looked back. The only place that I would possibly consider living in Texas would be Austin or the Austin environs. Anywhere else, it's especially Houston. So hot.
Yeah, Houston's tough. I mean, out where my ranch is, it's hot too. But I don't know. There's just something about those wide open spaces and those fields that after spending a good amount of time in Los Angeles, just sort of called me back.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing that when I go back there that I think about is just the skies look so different than they do here in LA. Yeah, I mean, everything is misty here. You have this thick pea soup kind of fog hanging over everything. But there, it's like the clouds are so defined and the sky is so defined in Texas.
Yeah, the clean air and those beautiful sunsets.
Can't beat it.
Yeah.
Do you have cattle? Or
I did for a while. I was running some Black Angus, but I got rid of all the cattle. We don't have any cattle anymore.
Oh, really?
They're a lot of work when you're not there.
Yeah. My grandfather, he was an architect, but he had a ranch
just kind of as somewhere to get away and play farmer on the weekends to get away from the craziness. And he, I forget what he had. He had heifers. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, those. And then he would switch them when he would get bored with them because he just liked sitting on the porch and watching his cows. And once he got bored with one color, he would sell them at auction and then get a bunch of more cows.
But I'm about to say there's nothing beautiful, more beautiful than looking out over a pasture of cattle.
Yeah.
Just grazing.
Now, I was also a huge fan of Halt and Catch Fire. And I know at least in season one, you were playing a guy in Dallas who was kind of tinkering in his garage with a computer in the 80s. And from what I know about you, that sounds pretty much close to what your life was like growing up. Did you have a certain amount of familiarity there?
Yeah, you know, I grew up in Dallas. You know, a lot of that that show was like a throwback to like all the things I saw when I was a kid watching my dad. But, I mean, Halt and Catch Fire was, I mean, God, that was, we did a 4 years on that, I think, four seasons. And man, it was a,
so good.
It was a trip to be on that job and stuff and see, because it was so much of a replicate of my life and where I grew up in Dallas.
Yeah. Yeah. You and I probably grew up in Texas around about the same time. And I forget their names. I had the creators. What is it? The two Chris's?
Or Chris.
Two?
Yeah. Chris Rogers and Chris Cantwell.
Yeah. And I remember we were talking about the 80s robots. And I remember as a kid, when that became the thing in the Sears catalog or whatever, I was like, oh, I want that. I got a robot. He'll bring me a Coke and it'll do all this stuff. And they didn't work for shit.
No, apparently. They didn't. They looked cool on your shelf.
Yeah. Yeah. We're still waiting for a decent robot these days.
30 years.
God. Well, I read at some point that you have dyslexia and actually went to a special school for that. How did that affect your acting? Do you think of it as something that you had to overcome, or has it maybe even been an asset in your career?
I did. I went to a school called the Shelton School of Dallas. It's one of the best schools for learning differences in the country. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that at the time, and I don't think it was at the time, but it is now. I don't know. I mean, maybe, you know, it's definitely, maybe it is an asset. However, it's not, I don't think it's an asset that's intentionally ever used. You know, it's just something that sort of pops up of sort of looking at things in a different perspective or a different way that I'm, when I do acknowledge it or see it, I do try and use it to my advantage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My sister-in-law actually teaches at a school for dyslexic kids. And she says, apparently there's a higher proportion of dyslexic kids in creative industries like entertainment and art and so forth.
Yeah, no, I mean, it would definitely lend itself to be so. Yeah.
Now, when you have dyslexia, does it make it more difficult to memorize scripts?
There's a dyslexia sort of viewed as this thing where kids write letters backwards or
which is not really the case.
It's not the case. Yeah. I have no problem. I mean, I read slower maybe, but I have no problems reading and writing. So for each individual, it's completely different.
Yeah.
For me, they sort of understood or learned that I was a visual learner.
Okay.
And each kid is, you know, sort of learner from visually or their ears or their hands. And so once they sort of identify that at the school, they sort of start teaching you everything with either hearing or visual. And mine was visual.
Huh. So with memorization, that doesn't affect it? Because I don't have dyslexia, but I have ADD. And I know if I ever had to memorize a script, I'd be completely lost.
Yeah. I mean, I struggled a lot with it, you know, mostly doing theater. Mm-hmm. But now it's like a muscle, you know what I mean? The more and more you use it, then the better and better it works. But, you know, I don't know. Every actor, I think, has a different process or none of them are the same. And so I can speak about it, but it probably might not make sense to most.
Sure, sure. Now, when did you first decide that you wanted to go into TV and movies?
My pops asked me when I was young, he was like, what's the one job that you could wake up every day and want to go to work? And I had a landscaping business at the time when I was in high school. And I loved it. But I also loved movies so much. I didn't watch much television as a kid, but I watched a ton of films.
Oh, yeah.
And I think just watching movies, I just wanted to go, what I really wanted to do was go get on set and just watch see how the movie's put together and how it's made, because they're all such a phenomenon or a fascination to me when I was younger.
Yeah. What kind of movies did you grow up on?
You know, the Indiana Jones, like some of the bigger ones, obviously Star Wars and whatnot, but it was more of like sort of the action sequences, which to me like were so far-fetched and unreal, but looked so real. But then I remember being like, can a car jump off of a parking garage and land on its wheels? And that doesn't, you know. And so, you know, the older I got and more, you know, the fascination of, the more and more I wanted to know how it was done. And by the time I was 18 or 19, I thought I wanted to go into the entertainment business, and I did an independent movie for no money, and meaning I didn't get paid, but nobody got paid. We didn't have any money for the movie. And it was at that time that I spent a lot of time with the cinematographer, John Bussey, that I realized, you know what, I love photography, and I think if I were to get into the entertainment business, it would be through cinematography.
Huh. So at some point, I think that I read that you originally wanted to be a cinematographer for nature movies or documentaries, huh?
I mean, yes, I sort of compiled that personally in my head. I had a love, I love camping, I love hiking, rock climbing, you know, being outdoors and fly fishing. And I thought, how can I get paid to do this, you know, to be out here? And so it was more of like, oh, I love cinematography. I was going to go to film school. Well, I'll go to film school and be a wildlife cinematographer. Having watched the Planet Earth diaries.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, the series is incredible, but they have these little diaries afterwards of the filming of and the making of.
Oh.
And you realize how brutal it was for the cinematographers and so boring at times.
Yeah, you think that you have a lot of hurry up and wait on a film set.
Yeah, this was weeks and weeks of sitting in a tent waiting for you know, snow leopard to walk past you for, you know, 10 seconds.
Yeah, no cell signal a lot of times.
Yeah, so
you're just
a little bit.
There.
When I'm camping, I like to stay on the move.
Yeah.
I don't like to sit in one spot.
Yeah, when you were a kid, I know that you kind of have an action side to you and you're a big motorcycle guy. Did you ever, like, try to replicate the stuff you saw in movies?
No, I don't really think I've had that much of an opportunity in the roles that I've taken to sort of indulge in some of the things that I really loved to do in my childhood.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully those things are on the horizon.
Well, now that you're sort of a known commodity in this business, do you think that you might try to parlay your career into directing or maybe start out by directing a few TV episodes or something?
Probably not television, but I've been wanting to direct for a long time, over a decade now, and been tinkering with some things, but the hardest thing for me to sort of commit to it is the script and the story, and I just haven't found something that I felt like is really 100% there, or I will find it, but then I'm like sort of distant from that project and wouldn't know how to direct that particular one. So I'm really looking for something that's in my wheelhouse that I feel comfortable and confident with that I could tell that story.
Yeah. Plus just the time commitment. I mean, that's way bigger than just, you know, showing up on set and acting.
For sure. But, you know, it's also, you're no longer a passenger in the car. You're the driver. So that, you know what I mean? Yeah. No, it's exciting too. Yeah. You know?
Well, I have to tell you, whenever I have a guest on, I usually at some point scroll through their IMDb, and I'm always kind of amused by the things that IMDb latches on to, whether it's, you know, things that they consider fun facts about people to put on their trivia
or how they sum up an actor.
Well, this was what was funny. IMDb describes you as an actor who, quote, tends to play downbeat characters who suffer a lot.
That's one way to look at it, I guess. You know, yes, I feel like recently, you know, I've played a lot of characters or quite a few characters with an extreme amount of flaws, you know, and sort of gone to the sort of weaker side of a character or individual. But part of that with this Narcos thing was stepping into a little bit more of an alpha dominant character, which is something I haven't done in a really, really long time. So it was a little switch for me and a change, and also made it more challenging and more fun.
Yeah. But when I think of Halt and Catch Fire or, you know, True Detective, which we're fantastic on, and Narcos, you do seem to gravitate toward these characters who are on a cusp of a breakdown. They're just right on that edge. What attracts you to that guy?
I don't know. That's a good question. Now that you're bringing it to the forefront, that I'm wondering if maybe that's just, you know, maybe there's too many parallels to that in myself. Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I subconsciously
are
constantly on the verge of a breakdown.
Well, especially with True Detective, I mean, God, to play a parent who lost a child, I can't even imagine what it's like preparing for a role like that. You must have had to get into a really dark place.
Yeah, well, that, I mean, I have two kids, but, like, you know, the more and more you think about it, when I was doing the job, was the more I thought less about myself and preparing for this role and in my kids, but I more started thinking about all the parents that have lost their children, and, like, until you really, really dive into it, the pain and the tragedy that is, that is, I mean, it still sits with me. I haven't seen the show just because it was really tough for me to do, and it'd be even tougher for me to watch. But, you know, that's where my head went mostly during that project. Of my heart just went out to so many parents that had unfortunate situations where, you know, they would lose a child. I mean, I think you always want, clearly as a parent, you want to outlive your kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder, is it hard to shake that character once you're done?
That one in particular, yeah. I mean, the best way to shake is to go home and hang out with your kids.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. But it did, you know, that one more so than anyone I've ever done did stick with me for a month or so or a couple months.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more when we come back in just a minute. Wave is a free, easy-to-use financial software that helps freelancers, consultants, and small business owners make, move, and manage their money, bringing them closer to financial success through accounting, invoicing, payments, and payroll. Just like Chris. Chris started his own business 3 years ago and has been using Wave ever since. He was never confident about the financial aspects of running his own business, but since discovering Wave, he was relieved to find a service that made invoicing and payments so straightforward. Wave's free accounting, receipt management, and invoicing tools give your business the professionalism it deserves. Have employees? Wave can pay them directly and automate your payroll tax filings. Payroll helps business owners like Sean. Sean felt like he was dealing with taxes and payroll every day, and making sure everyone got paid took away the enjoyment of running his business. Having automatic deductions with payroll let him get back to doing what he enjoys most. I only recently started using Wave. I was tired of the hassle of invoicing, chasing clients for payment, payroll, accounting, tax compliance. It's a headache that I just didn't need. I just wanted to be able to focus on my podcast. That's why I love Wave's easy-to-use accounting software. It's simple, intuitive, and it saves me time. In fact, now I'm using Wave for my payroll and invoicing as well. Bottom line, Wave simplifies my life. It's time to ditch the Excel spreadsheets, shoeboxes full of receipts, and lost invoices, and start growing your business. Set your business up for financial success by signing up for your free account today at waveapps.com/kick. That's waveapps.com/kick. At some point, I heard that you said that as an actor, you always like to check in with yourself and sort of make mental notes of your emotions and reactions to things in real life. Do you think that acting has made you maybe more self-aware, maybe even made you learn things about yourself in the process?
You know, it does. It makes you almost too self-aware.
Really?
There's just, you know, there's certain things that I think individuals don't like about themselves. That's just who they are. And I think being aware of yourself and stuff that you do see, you know, obviously flaws in yourself that you wish you could fix, that you can't. They're just a part of you.
Yeah.
And it can be frustrating at times knowing that there's a part of you that you wish was different, but that's just who you are, you know.
What's usually the first thing that you want to know about a character you're going to play?
Usually what he looks like.
Really?
Yeah, huh. It's kind of bizarre. It's probably not the right answer as an actor, but I usually start I love to start with the facade, the exterior, and then, I don't know, the interior sort of comes over time. It's not something you can force in a day or a week.
Okay.
But you can sort of the appearance of him, you know what I mean? And then the sort of internal stuff sort of comes all the way up until shooting, and then obviously through the process of shooting.
Yeah, and I've also heard that I guess every character that you play stems from someone that you either know or you've met or seen along the way in real life. Is that true?
I mean, not everyone, but the majority of them. Yeah, it's a great starting point. Mm-hmm. You know, you take this person over here that you know really well, you know what they look like, and then you say, okay, that's maybe the facade. I'm going to sort of base it on that. And then obviously who that person that you're basing on that you know really well, those things change. But it's just a quicker launching point to be like, okay. And it's also things to fall back on. Like, let's just say the person is a friend named Jack. When you don't have an answer to something, you can at least, well, what would Jack do about, you know, what would he do about this? You know what I mean? And so, I don't know, maybe it's a cop out or it's a cheat, but,
I can see how that would be helpful though.
For me,
if you can visualize the person, then that must make it a lot easier.
Yeah. And yeah, no, absolutely. And also, you know, you start to sort of dress or cut your hair like that person. Oh, yeah. So when you catch yourself in the morning brushing your teeth, it sort of reminds you to think about that or think about this person. I don't know. It's just sort of to wear it, you mm-hmm. know, wear it on you.
Yeah, I wonder, your character in Narcos is DEA agent Walt Breslin. Was that based on someone or did you draw on someone that you know for that?
Yeah, I did. It's not based on somebody, but mm-hmm. there was somebody that I sort of loosely based it off of, not necessarily his appearance. It was a Mexican individual, and so I'm clearly not Mexican, but you know, I took some of the stories that I'd heard from about that person and sort of incorporated them into the
Yeah, was he in law enforcement?
Yeah, he was.
Okay. Yeah, I was gonna ask you, is this character based on a real person or is it a composite of different people?
I think it's, for them, I think it's a composite of things, mm-hmm. but for me, I made it very specific to one person so that it wasn't so, it was more clear in the decisions and choices and opinions that the character had.
When you prepared for this role, did you actually meet with DEA agents? Did you want to pick their brains?
Yeah, I spent some time with the Los Angeles DEA.
Oh, yeah?
Went down there and interviewed some of them, talked to some of them. They were incredibly helpful, but the problem with them is that they're sort of telling stories about the now. You know, right. Where they're going after fentanyl and and methamphetamines and whatnot, so the more beneficial sort of research was I spent some time with Jaime Kirkendall, played by Matt Lesher in the show. I actually met with the real he lives down on the border of in South Texas.
What's he like?
He's retired for years now, but I mean he was the guy that was around during the Kiki Camarena execution, and so his stories were really beneficial because they were about that time, and the DEA was completely different back then than it is now. And also the writers and producers have done extensive amount of research and interviewed with for hours and hours with a lot of these people, so you could just sort of cut out the fat and go right to the writers and producers, and they had, you know, all the information of any question that you might have.
And now, in the first season, you were actually the voice of the narrator of Narcos Mexico and were only introduced on screen, I think, in the final episode. Now you play a much, much bigger role in season two. Was that always the plan, that season one would sort of be the prologue for your character and then the second season would largely be driven by you in this next chapter?
Well, you know, we kind of both. I, you know, had committed to the show during the shooting of True Detective is when it sort of all came to fruition. And it was at that point that they knew I was going to do the voiceover.
Oh, really?
And so we had almost 6 months before we went into production. And so that was something the producers tinkered with, was maybe Walt will do the voiceover for this. And then as well, I was able to get off of True Detective for a couple of weeks to go down to Mexico to shoot that scene. But that was bonus. It wasn't once they sort of we made the commitment and everybody knew that I was going to do the show. At that point, they're like, well, if you are, then maybe we can put you in the last episode to set you up. So I don't think it was something that was planned. It was something that sort of an opportunity that they took advantage of.
Okay. So you were already committed to play this role on screen in the second season before they brought you on as narrator.
That's correct.
Huh. Yeah. Okay. Now, when you were narrating all of those episodes, were you sort of champing at the bit to finally get on screen and be able to physically manifest this character?
Yeah, no. I mean, like through the voiceover and stuff that I did, I was working with all the producers are in the recording session. So between the five of us and me, or the five of them and me, I really had 2-3 weeks in the recording studio to sort of find the character or discover him. And okay. with these guys, they're telling me, and they're very specific on the voiceover of every single word and every line. So I got an idea of who they thought the character was while injecting what I thought it was. And so it was a big benefit coming down to start the show, is that I didn't feel like I was lost and starting from somewhere. I at least had an anchor to start from.
Oh, interesting. So you kind of had some time to inhabit that character and get in that headspace.
That, and also, like, yeah, a lot of time for 3 weeks with those guys, for them to constantly talk about, you know, his opinions on things and what his thoughts are and things. So, and they're incredibly smart room, really mm-hmm. smart writer's room.
Yeah,
and Eric is really incredible at what he does. And so, you know, those guys essentially held my hand to help me, you know, launch this thing off.
Yeah. And in season two, Walt Breslin heads up something called Operation Leyenda. What can you tell us about that?
Not too much, because we don't know 100% about it, but Operation Leyenda was a real op that after the execution of Kiki Camarena's murder, they put together a task force to go down to Mexico to sort of cause disruption within the drug cartels. The interesting thing about that is that there's not been written anything. It's very, very specific.
Right, it's kind of off the books. So.
Yeah, and also I think that the U.S. government didn't want to know what they were doing, because if they knew, then they wouldn't be allowed to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And also for them to have a finger to point at somebody if they did get caught. Well, he was working a rogue, or he was, you know, on his own. So. Yeah. But it is a true thing. I think in the show it lasts 2 years, but I think in real life the operation went for just under 10.
Yeah, in season one, at least, I guess we could plausibly believe that these agents were largely driven by, you know, a desire to enforce the law and protect people. Whereas in season two, these agents seem to be driven by revenge, sometimes with some unfortunate collateral damage along the way. What was it like to play someone who sort of treads that thin line where your guy can easily become the monster that he's trying to defeat?
That's a good question. You know, I always never try to judge a character that I'm playing, because, mm-hmm. you know, the motives for that individual character, they think what they are doing is right.
Sure.
You know, so for Walt, I think what's interesting in the dynamics of the character is that his professional vendetta gets muddied with his personal vendetta,
mm-hmm.
which also adds a lot more, you know, the writers did a good job, but that making it keep it more richness to the character. But that inevitably is what sort of hurts the character as well, mm-hmm. or gets him into trouble,
mm-hmm.
is that he does make it personal, too personal at times.
Yeah, I was going to say the irony of this is that Walt is out there trying to get revenge for this slain agent, Kiki Camarena, who's someone that he never even knew personally.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the job I think that, you know, Walt is you know, has signed up for.
Mm-hmm.
But the revenge that he has for, you know, sort of taking down Felix Gallardo, Diego Luna's character, it's that he does have, he feels responsible, I think, subconsciously for his brother's death.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the personal side of it. And yet the other side of it is, you know, his professional, which is, you know, somebody to point the finger on, somebody to blame for his brother's death, when inevitably he should just be blaming himself.
And I remember in episode one, season one, you open as narrator by saying, I'm going to quote you here, "I'm going to tell you a story, but I'll be honest, it doesn't have a happy ending. In fact, it doesn't have an ending at all." Now, of course, the audience who are watching, they know that the drug wars in Mexico are ongoing and have only gotten bloodier since Gallardo. When you were getting into this character, was it hard to keep that out of your head and avoid playing him with a certain awareness of the end game and maybe even the futility of it all?
Well, I didn't 100% know the final episode.
Okay.
So, I mean, those, you know, but for me, it was, you know, he's just trying to win. Mm-hmm. You know, he wants some sort of gratification that he made a difference or made a change or he won.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what his main, you know, sort of focus mm-hmm. and goal is so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but now we know that, you know, after Felix Gallardo, there's been so much more violence, El Chapo and whatever has now replaced El Chapo. And there's a great scene where I don't want to give away too much, but it's explained to you that instead of one organized leader, you're now going to be dealing with cartel wars and chaos and blood in the street. It almost reminds me of Saddam Hussein. You know, here you have this ruthless monster, but when Saddam was ruling Iraq, you didn't have ISIS and all the chaos that's there, you know, and all the myriad unintended consequences that come with that. I wonder, knowing what you know now, do you think that putting Felix Gallardo away was still a win for the DEA?
No, I don't think it was. And I partly love that end of the show is that, you know, Walt's character sort of finally gets what he wants. He gets his guy, but inevitably what he's actually done is created a bigger problem for the war on drugs and a bloodier problem for the war on drugs. So you have two characters that essentially are victims to the war on drugs and that both lost. They didn't win. Even though they got everything that, you know, that they wanted, it just continues and sort of, and that is the truth and reality of the situation of the war on drugs.
It just keeps going. Well, I know that you are always working. What's up next for you?
Well, I'll be honest. I'm not supposed to say.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I have heard that you're working on a higher loyalty. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I just finished on that job. Billy Ray was writer-director on that. It was just so much fun to work with. And the cast that they brought in, Brendan Gleeson is playing Donald Trump.
Oh, wow.
Jeff Daniels is playing Jim Comey.
Oh, great. Good
Holly
cast.
Hunter, Sally Yates. But the script that he wrote is really sort of, it, you know, very accurate, but very, very, very sort of humorous, taking a step back and looking at it from an outsider's perspective.
Yeah, I'll bet.
But when Brendan Gleeson came on, it was like a out-of-body experience with sort of Trump looming over you, and he was just so convincing and so good.
Wow. How's his spray tan?
It's good. He's just playing a really realistic version of him, sort of a, you know, but it was just, it was bizarre to see him sort of talk. You really felt like Trump was sort of bearing over you talking. It was really an out of body experience.
Yeah. Cause you play, Rod Rosenstein, right?
I play, Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, which was, you know, interesting role to say the least.
Gosh, given the political environment these days and the president's penchant for retribution, were you at all reticent about taking on a role like that?
Not to speak too much about
okay,
politics,
fair enough, fair
but
enough.
I could give a shit what Donald Trump thinks.
Okay, fair enough. Well, season 2 of Narcos Mexico is available on Netflix starting February 13th. Scoot McNairy, thanks, man.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on, man. I really appreciate it. This is great.
Thanks again to Scoot McNairy for coming on the show. Season 2 of Narcos Mexico is now streaming on Netflix.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and rate and review us while you're there. 5-star ratings and detailed reviews are one of the best ways for new listeners to discover the show. You can also follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at @KickassNewsPod and recommend us to your friends on your social media. For more fun stuff, visit kickassnews.com, and I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News.